Hello, everybody, to the Spring of Life show. My name is Benjamin, and I'm here with my wonderful co-host, Jasmine.
Hi, Benjamin. How are you? Hello, everybody. Happy spring.
Very early for the spring, and for us, it's spring all year long. How lovely is that? It's so nice to just have the spring of life bubble through us every day, through the present moment, no matter what time it is, no matter where we're at. It's just lovely. So let's bring in some more of that light, life, and laughter into us tonight, and let's talk a little bit about intentioning. I had something very interesting happen to me today where I had to figure out several technical things with the email program on our new website that we're setting up. And it was fascinating as in the morning I attempted to get this sorted out and I hadn't really thought a lot about the intentions behind it all. And funnily enough, I ended up speaking with a technical support assistant who didn't seem to be incredibly capable at sorting out with me together on the phone how to make this email client work. And we tried it again and again with different settings and it just wouldn't function. Later in the day, I had sat down and wanted to now give the support center another call. So I did, but before I did, I intentioned what kind of a feeling, what kind of an experience I wanted to have with this next support person. And it just happened to be the case that this next individual was just so lovely. It was a wonderful individual that was so understanding, so helpful, and with just one slight adjustment, he was able to make things work for us like a charm. And it was amazing to see again how powerful the universe can cooperate when we just put out the right intentions. For me, what has worked most often is to really get into the feeling that I want to have at the end of the experience. And when I start to envision that, when I start to feel into that, then I actually find all the strings are being pulled such that everything around me just sorts itself to actually provide me that experience.
That's a great story, and I loved watching you move through that today as well, Benjamin. And it was really interesting because I heard bits and pieces of the conversation while you were in your office working your way through this, which I really appreciate. Thank you for handling that, because that's just not my forte. What a great team. And I heard you say goodbye, Matthew, to the techie dude who helped you. And I thought that was a very apt name. It felt very, the reference I got was, wasn't that like a disciple, some like a holy name, a biblical name, if you will. We're going to reference that book for as a book of teaching. Now, you said something that piqued my interest. You said the universe cooperates. And yes, it does. And what comes to me is that's because we are the universe. That universe is within us and around us. And when we cooperate in our own worlds through setting our intentions and beyond just a mental intention of saying, oh, I really want that to work out this way, or it'd be really cool if I had a parking spot, or gee, it'd be nice if that job offer came through. Those are great pointers from the mental realms, the mind space, if you will. But I found that it really boils down to feeling how that would feel. Because my experience is that I am the universe. I do affect and influence all that's around me. Everything else is a neutral prop. So when I decide how I want the stage play to enact itself, when I recognize that I'm the players, the director, and the props, and everything else, then I set my intention how I want this scene to go, and or this segment, this piece, this intention, this endeavor. And then I feel how I want to feel, as you said, Ben, at the end of it. And from that place, I found that every time I'm aligned, for a moment I was wondering, is that true? Can I really say, is it true for me? It's only true if it's true for me, or your truth is your truth. So that is what that is. Is there a divine truth? I don't know. But I found that to be true for me 100% of the time. I was looking for a situation or an event where it didn't unfold that way. And even when things unfold in ways that I didn't intend, what I found is that either it'll be better than my original intention, or I wasn't aligned because something underneath didn't believe it could happen, or I wasn't entirely clear about the outcome I was wanting in my feeling world, not from the hows of how it unfolds, or I went into the how it's supposed to happen. That is supposed to come to me on this particular day, in this particular way, delivered by that most specific person, containing exactly that red, puffy, velvety bow in that earth tone colored box at 3 o'clock from the health food store manager. And when I get into those nitty gritties of how, I find that limiting, frustrating, and doesn't really yield the results I want. It's like I'm trying to get too controlling.
That's so fascinating. What I found too was that emotion at that point really does become the guiding principle. When I've already set my intention from an emotional place, all of a sudden I can interpret the neutral props around me in a way that goes in alignment with that emotional state. All of a sudden I can actually put the meaning into the situations that I'm facing with that underlying guidance that I've already set for myself. All of a sudden I have a much greater control over how I interpret the things that are happening around me. And I found that what you mentioned there too is quite an important piece, that I can imagine, for example, a particular image or a small little video of how I would like it to turn out. But I've also learned that I actually need to let go of the exact specifics of what this little lower mind then wants it to be. Those specifics don't necessarily tend to actually turn out exactly that one particular way. Actually, when I then just go with the emotional vibration of it and I let the higher mind fill in the details, I often find that what I was able to come up with this lower mind, the mind that I'm using on a day-to-day basis, was never as good as what actually unfolded, for as long as I really put my intention into it beforehand.
I agree. Now, the one thing I'd like to play with and really honor here is I'll call it a process, or call it, you know, the underlying murky waters. Because there's many times I found in my world and working with clients that we want something. We intend for it to happen. We read books like The Secret and we go to seminars and we align ourselves and we're really feeling it. We're feeling it. And somehow it just doesn't really show up. And when that happens, what I found is that there is generally, most often, an underlying belief, a polarized ping pong game going on within. I want that. I want it. I'm feeling it. It would be so good to have that chocolate ice cream cone. Oh, I love chocolate. I remember being a kid and going, you know, the ice cream truck was coming and we'd run and get the ice cream and it would be so delicious. It would run down our arms and we'd sing songs and laugh and play. I think Eddie Murphy has a really great ice cream man whole scenario on his Delirious film, but stand-up comedy DVD, but nevertheless, we want the chocolate ice cream. We love the chocolate ice cream. We have great memories of the chocolate ice cream. And we're feeling it and wanting it. But underneath, there's chocolate ice cream is fattening.
I shouldn't have that.
That's not good for me. It has milk in it. And God knows what they're feeding those cows.
Oh, with my lactose intolerance, I'm so going to blow it up.
Oh, and that's going to hurt. It's just not worth it. But I can't wait to get that chocolate ice cream. I think it'll be so good to have that chocolate ice cream. I can feel the chocolate ice cream. And sure, we're feeling that chocolate ice cream. And underneath, on the other end of that feeling is the gurgling, rumbling, bloated belly, fat thighs, big hips, another extra 45 minutes on that treadmill, people. There's that voice underneath that says, don't do it. Yeah, you could, but you know what's going to happen. And some of these little underlying beliefs, they give us just enough rope to let us move away from that peg, don't they? Oh, of course you can have the ice cream, Jasmine. That's not a problem. Yeah, you know, live a little, have one. You've been so good. You really do deserve it. But just remember that if you have too much, or, you know, if you have that certain kind, well, you know, it just might not work out so good for you. No, but you can go ahead and do it. Maybe just have a spoon. But, you know, maybe even that, maybe you should just go for something a little more health conscious.
I want it, but I shouldn't have it. I want it, but I shouldn't have it. Isn't that sort of like the famous devil-angel scenario, one on one side and on the other?
Absolutely. And I love that, because oftentimes we look at things as that dualistic perspective. There's the angel and the devil. I love the visual I'm getting on that. That's so Fred Flintstone, you know. Do it, Freddie. No, you shouldn't. Wilma won't like it. Oh, do it. You deserve it. Barney will be with you. No, don't do it. So, but in the middle of that, actually, it's very only most recently that I'm starting to include in my world the center point, because there's the so-called little devil, then there's a little angel, and in the middle of that is that central, can we call it interpreter, the point of all-inclusiveness, that neutral point, the balance point.
Yeah, and I find usually the issue comes about when we go into an extreme either way. When we say we should never have chocolate, or I always want chocolate. Because once I put myself into either of the two places, that's when the challenge comes about. When I'm saying I should never have chocolate, then again I'm in a place where I feel like I should never have chocolate, and I'm taking my freedom away to actually feel in my body when it might actually be most appropriate for me to now have a piece of chocolate or maybe a bar. Who knows what it is, but I won't be able to get that signal from my body anymore, because I've already decided that my body should never have chocolate. Or when I'm saying the opposite, oh, I always want chocolate. And then we hypnotize ourselves, but it's going to go straight to my thighs, to my thighs, to
or
my
it also,
thighs.
Yeah, my thighs. or we miss and deny the signals that might say, you know what, actually today I want vanilla. Or I'm really in the mood for caramel. I'd like some fruit.
Or maybe even just a solid meal before I go for dessert.
What
or
are you
the other way around. I want the dessert first before I have the meal.
I'm a dessert first woman, you know that.
But when I make those overarching, or when I create those overarching thoughts and beliefs that are saying I should always have the proper meal first, the savory meal first, then I might not be able to hear when I actually just feel like having a bar.
Well, you know, you used a word in that sentence that I'd like to open into. You used the word proper. I should have a proper meal. And isn't that the way so many of us think and act according to that thought without ever perhaps taking a look at something and saying, what is proper? What is the meaning of the word proper in your world? What is the meaning of that? And we each, and when I say your world, I'm speaking to the proverbial you. And of course, Ben, you're more than welcome to share what your version of that is. And if each of us would really ask of ourselves, what is proper? We start defining, you know, chocolate makes you fat. Says who? And then define fat. What is fat? Oh, well, you know, we've all been told being fat and being obese is not good. It's unhealthy. It's unattractive. Is it?
Well, I find even the expression, it makes you fat, as if a person all of a sudden just becomes one globule of fat. That's not really ever going to happen. Okay, you might have more layers of fatty tissues under your skin, But even the language around it becomes so hilarious. In a certain sense, though, what it proper used to mean for me is that it's something along the lines of what I'm used to, what I see around me all the time, the things that I see on a day-in, day-out basis. If I'm used to having breakfast, lunch, and dinner, then those are the proper meals to have. If, for example, I'm used to having a savory meal first and then a little bit of dessert after, that's what seems proper. And even what different cultures and countries eat might be seen as proper in accordance to what they're really used to.
So what I heard was proper is what I'm used to having or used to doing or used to saying or used to thinking or used to believing. So that perhaps could be one of the most stunning definitions of that word I've ever heard in.
That's what it used to be for me. Yes, yes. But it is no more that way. It has changed to, with relieving myself of a lot of beliefs of what I should be doing and what I shouldn't be doing, and allowing myself a lot more freedom in my world and a lot more flexibility in the mental realm, I have come to a place where it's a lot easier to work with the flow of what currently presents in the moment so that I can actually recognize what may be proper for me in any given moment. Let me give you an example for that. The other day, I was working away on a computer project, and I had just completed that project. And usually I like to eat something savory when I'm hungry first, because that's actually what my body craves first. Sometimes something sweet, but usually something savory first. This time, even though I was hungry, I was actually really feeling like a piece of chocolate. Like having a piece of chocolate.
You looked like a piece of chocolate.
No, I wasn't a piece of chocolate, but I felt like having one. And there was actually a thought that came through my mind that said, ooh, I shouldn't have a piece of chocolate now.
Ooh.
Maybe I should eat something proper first. But I felt into my body, and it actually was springing with life forth through my body and through the emotions with a feeling of excitement for a piece of chocolate that you had made a few months before. And I went to the fridge and took out the container, had the piece of chocolate, and I actually even started noticing that I was chewing on the other side where I'm usually not necessarily chewing. Most people have one side they chew on more. Some people chew on more so the left, some more so on the right. Some people switch it up, but for me, it's actually the right. And actually, lately, I've had a little chip on my tooth that can make it a little comfortable, but somehow, automatically, I chewed on the other side where it was actually more comfortable. And it just all felt so in alignment, and I was so joyful after having this piece of chocolate that I could really recognize that going with that flow just brought about such joy, and there was no consideration anymore of it being bad for me. And I had no ill effects that I could notice of any kind. I would have said quite the opposite. It probably brought up my serotonin levels quite substantially.
Love those elevated serotonin levels. I live for that. I am a walking elevated serotonin level, except for when I'm not. You know how that goes. I'd like to quickly say if there's any listeners that would love to call in, our call-in live line, we'd love to share with you and hear your perspectives on this, on chocolate or beliefs or anything at all, or your cat named Fred. Our call-in live number is 888-627-6008. And there's also a BBS Fast Chat link. You can come on online on bbsradio.com and a Studio One and press the Fast Chat, and we would love to chat with you. So I hear now from you, Benjamin, that proper is no longer what you're used to having. Used, that's such a funny word, used, U-S-E-D. What I'm familiar with thinking and familiar with eating and familiar with doing or believing or experiencing or saying, or the way I'm familiar with sitting or acting. What I'm hearing now is that proper is what feels good for you in the moment, even if it might be a little unfamiliar, a little unusual. Perhaps even we'll call it against the grain of what we've been taught, told, or sold, or what we've been bought into, or punished into, or convinced to do by our families, or media, or school. All of those lovely learning, little learning communities.
Well, and I find it so funny what we are getting used to and are also programmed with by our outside world. For example, if we are constantly told by our art teacher that we're not artistic, for example, at some point we would actually adopt the thought that we're actually not artistic, and maybe even the thought that goes along with that, that we're not even creative. And all of a sudden we go about our lives not really exploring that beautiful creative side that each and all of us have within, that just lies dormant because we heard those words a few times back in the past and actually got hypnotized into such a belief, shaping the way that we think, shaping the way that we act, simply because we picked it up. And when we're little, it's so much easier to influence us in all types of directions that we just are sponges that soak up these types of beliefs and then could potentially carry them onwards for the rest of our lives if we never go back and actually ask ourselves, was that actually true? Is that actually something that could be true, simply because my art teacher didn't know how to teach me properly doesn't necessarily mean that I sucked at art.
Well, exactly. And what I have decided for myself, that the only belief, the master belief that I choose to buy into, if you will, that I'm really good with, is the belief that I can change any belief to serve me, because I've decided that I am only willing to feel good. And actually, that's not true. That's a misstep in my language. I'm willing to experience whatever's currently present, and I'm completely willing to take a look at, investigate, and explore my inner territory to notice if there's something going on that is not serving me. Because I have found that when I'm walking around feeling pretty good, generally whatever's running the factory of Jasmine is beating at a really high vibration, positive way of being. I'm enjoying life. I'm noticing beauty. I'm immersed and focused in the moment. And I find myself smiling and feeling really light. And I do know that I can change beliefs. But there is a caveat. People really have to begin to ask themselves questions. Am I enjoying what I'm doing? Is that true? Who told me that chocolate was going to make me thunder thighs? Really, define thunder thighs. What exactly does a fat behind look like? Why is fat bad? What does fat mean? Who says fat is unattractive? Who says chocolate is bad?
Actually, that really depends on oftentimes the cultural views, because in North America, it's that thinner ideal is often portrayed as more desirable. However, if we go to, for example, African cultures, very often a more round body is what's more desired. And in psychology class, for example, I learned that very often what determines this is what's scarce in any particular culture. So if there is a culture where people tend to be larger, then the thinner is often desired because it's just more scarce. The other way around, when there is a culture where there's a lot of very thin people, the more round and voluptuous people are the ones that are more desired, because in the respective cultures, each of them are then seen as wealthy or having that which only few can get, seen as the ones that were able to attain that which is scarce. Those are the resourceful people automatically, or it's at least the automatically recognized as that. And I guess a lot of this is actually coming more from an unconscious programming, which I find fascinating, but isn't necessarily something that needs to be set in stone. It's something that can be altered with
the belief that you can alter it,
yes.
The belief that we can question it. And what about that one? Do you believe, you being the proverbial you, beautiful avatar person I'm speaking to, the master, listening right now, do you believe that you have the right and the ability to question what you currently believe, what others tell you should believe or shouldn't believe? Do you believe that you can question authority? I mean, most of us listening on this radio station will, of course, say yes. And that's a beautiful thing. Do you believe that you can question deeply? Do you know that you can and that you can listen deeply? Do you believe that you have your own answers? Do you believe that if you decide that chemtrails are big deal, that they have no effects on you? Do you believe that you'll be okay? Do you believe you need to protect yourself from certain foods or peoples or energies? How does that make you feel when you believe that the world is a dangerous place? Do you question that belief? Have you ever questioned your own power? What if you could eat all the ice cream in the world and be firm, fit, and fabulous and healthy and be an athlete? Oh, that's ridiculous, Jasmine. That's impossible. We all know that Olympic athletes do not eat 5-gallon barrels of chocolate ice cream while sitting in their hot tub. Are you sure? What if you could be the first?
Well, I would say that maybe some are able to do that if it goes in accordance with their highest joy.
Bingo.
The question is more, I would say, not necessarily what are the limits of what's possible, because I believe actually that pretty much anything is possible. But where the crux of the biscuit is that if we want to be happy, we won't get around following our highest joy. There is some tickle, there is some excitement that all of us are able to find within if we're willing to look, listen, and investigate. Because only when we investigate will we actually have a chance to find that which we're looking for. Only if we start asking ourselves the question, what is my excitement? What is my joy? How can I find it? Is it actually something that we do find? Well, and if we don't care about it, or if we're already in such a brilliant place that we don't need to ask that question, then that's fine too.
And that's the joy of the joy space. There are no questions. It seems to me that I don't question my joy. I don't wonder, wow, I'm so joyful. What possibly could have triggered this joy? I'm in this love space. You know, I'm in love, or I'm in love with someone or something, or in the space of love. There's no question. How do you know? A friend of mine told me, she asked her mother once, "Mom, how do I know when I'm in love?" And her mother says, "You don't have to ask. You just know." So that's like with the joy and the bliss and the relaxation and the peace and the comfort and the knowing, all of those personal places, there's no need to question. There's not or even a consideration of it. It's really just a moving through your world in that moment from that place. And that seems to propel us forward, call us, beckon us, and open things up. Now, when we're in perhaps other states of being, like anger, frustration, overwhelm, certainly that warrants questions that come quite automatically. Oftentimes, those questions are projected outward, like, gee, how come that person did that to make me feel so fill in the blank? But when we're in joy, I've yet to ask myself, gee, I don't know what that person did to make me feel so good. I just enjoy the rush of the feeling.
Although sometimes it might be a really good question to ask so that we can actually create more of it.
Well, that's actually interesting because Benjamin will be doing, Benjamin and I will be sitting with Richard Bandler very soon. I had to think about that for a second because I have an acronym that I put in the middle for him, a little nickname that I'm not allowed to say on air, but nevertheless, he's wonderful and one of the co-founders of NLP. And what we are going to take a course in is a neurohypnotic repatterning. And that actually takes a look at states and how to shift and consciously recreate inner states and the chemical, biochemical, physiological responses in the body vehicle that are a result of that. I'm quite excited. Quite excited. 6 days of Bandler. Who knows who will be when we come back?
Yeah, it'll be absolutely lovely of a time, I'm sure. Having sat with Bandler several times, it's been a lovely time every single time. And at this moment, I also want to remind our listeners that you can gladly call in if you want to join the conversation or have a question for us or even want to challenge us a little bit. You can gladly give us a call at 1-888-627-6008. I'll repeat that once more. It's 1-888-627-6008. And from here, what I would like to talk about is also that a lot of the time we can have it a bit backwards. It's not that we're actually a body that has a spirit, but it's more like that we're a spirit first that's inhabiting a body. And to go into this a little deeper, it's that we're constantly having our spiritual energy flow into our bodies 24/7 all the time because we are spirits first. We can't ever really disconnect entirely and fully from our spirit. Now, the question is more, what's the quality of the flow that we're allowing to come into our bodies? And this flow is something that just comes in naturally all the time. But when we have one of those beliefs that just seems to clog us up, that's the point when we don't feel so good. That's the point when we're actually not seeing ourselves or the situation around us in the same light that our spirit sees it. That's also why we feel so dark. That's why we're feeling those darker emotions. That's why we're feeling so low on energy. It's because we've been clogging our mind space up with stuff that doesn't allow to let this spiritual energy, this wonderful light and love that is available to us all the time, flow into our body easily and swiftly. And that's essentially some of the physics or the anatomy of how this flow works. So the mind oftentimes tends to be the bottleneck, I have found for myself.
Absolutely. I agree, Benjamin. And you know, I had an interesting experience with that this weekend where I had quite a hairball come out and I was quite surprised. I could feel it brewing. And out it came at the most, well, I'd like to say it was an inopportune time. And what I know is everything is divine. It was the most opportune moment possible. And leaving out all the gory details because I'm really not into the horror film, I can sum it up by saying I was surprised to gain the personal insight and awareness that I was still carrying the belief and the ideas that I was responsible for the health, wellness, happiness, and overall well-being of others. Wow. Talk about a ball and chain. Talk about carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders. And now, you know, I'd like to, and I'll share with our listeners, is I've been on this path of self-awakening for a very, very, very long time. I've done a lot of work. I've been through the trenches and like to consider myself feeling pretty light most of the time. So it was very surprising that this could come on out of nowhere. And I'm also really grateful that I've done my work and that I accessed the tools, that I had the ability to sit quietly amidst it somehow, although it was a little challenging to get there. It really had a lot of momentum built on that one. I was surprised, and it really came out like a gale force wind out of nowhere. I mean, you got to watch, right, Ben? It was entertaining, wasn't it? I mean, hello.
What a fascinating show it was.
It was a fascinating show.
Better than any TV program because it was happening live.
And yes, and you know, it was really interesting because as I noticed, there was the person who, the other people or two people who were involved in this, said to me, I recall hearing something like, are you enjoying this? And being taken by it, there was also that highly developed sense of the overseer, the oversoul, the
observer,
call it my higher self, you know, Bob's your uncle, whatever we want to call that, was watching and was able to respond honestly amidst the drama that was in the frothy foaminess that was coming out of my mouth and my emotions. It was quite shocking, actually. I haven't had a moment like that in a very, very, very long time. And this person said, sounds like you're enjoying this. And that overseer part of me, the observer, said, yes, there is a part of me that is enjoying this. And that's when I somehow recognized that something had me, like that dog with a toy had me and was shaking me by my neck. And it came out of nowhere from my back and it took me. And I am so grateful that I have the tools. And so all you people out there who have coaches, your coaches freak out too sometimes. And even the best of the coaches, the best of us, we have our moments. And that's where the really cool tools come from. They're born from that ability to, I suppose, you know, dissect our own regurgitated nonsense and old archaic records. And actually, that brings me to, go ahead, Ben.
And I would actually say that it's not necessarily each and every time required, but a lot of the time that'll be exactly what's required in order to be able to find the way out of it again, to gain the tools, and at least dealing with it consciously allows for a new path to actually assist other people in finding paths out of their challenges as well. It actually brings about more excitement when those raw moments come and allows for more openness and honesty with oneself, because it's not something that we necessarily are so much victims of anymore, but rather find ways of dealing with it, gaining those tools, those skills to become conscious in those moments.
Absolutely. And this brings me to a point that I've actually wanted to make, which is to speak to the importance of coaches, of having a coach or a guide or a mentor, whatever word you like to use, in your life. And even, I mean, I don't care who you are and what level you're at. I was a martial artist for a long time. And we used to say, you don't work with a sensei who doesn't have a sensei. Every teacher has a teacher has a teacher. Every coach, has someone or other groups of people that they interact with and hone their tools and sharpen their skills, and they do that in the laboratory of themselves. And who is that golfer? Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods has a coach. Wayne Gretzky had a coach. His coach was his dad. I mean, yes, he had hockey coaches, but he had the one guy who coached him up there is his dad his whole life, till his dad, transcended and moved on into another realm.
Yes, it's definitely incredibly helpful to get that outside insight.
Yes.
Which you can't have when you're actually in it yourself. And that's also part of the reason why the best of the best of the best of the best always also have a coach. And there is also a time to become a master at what you do. There is no question about that. And though there is also the evolution of the soul, when we stop growing, we're not flowing. And there is that beauty of working with someone else and allowing oneself to just continuously flourish and evolve and grow from the new perspective, the fresh insight, the new information, and going not only in an expanded way, but also deeper within. And that's what we specialize in. That's what we do all day, every day. And if you would like to take advantage of our knowledge and skills and just different perspectives, we're gladly offering to you anything and everything that we have to offer. Well, pretty not necessarily
everything. Well, not
everything.
Necessarily everything. I took myself off that cross a long time ago, because there was a time when I lived in that place. Well, I called it martyr.
Yes, because I'm not necessarily going to give myself away. No. But I'm gladly going to assist you in any which way that does feel integrous.
And when people are, I call it hungry. Are you hungry for freedom? Are you hungry for your own clarity? Are you hungry passionately for your desires, for fruition in your life, for freedom? Are you hungry? Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Those are questions I asked myself. And when that calling from within bubbles forth, there is no stopping you. And you'll find yourself led to the most perfect coach or guide. Books will fall off the shelf. Workshop flyers will glow in the dark. Radio shows will sing to you. Music will come on the radio. Signs will be on the highway. It's beautiful birds. I saw actually something very rare bird in the location I was in driving with you yesterday, Ben, on our way back to our beautiful palace. I saw a white owl, a snowy white owl. It was beautiful. And that was just after I had moved that chunky, clogged drain full of hair, and I felt exhausted yet exhilarated and open, and there just seemed to be so much more space inside of me. And it was really a nice omen. And then actually moments later, you said, look, and in front of our car flew by a hawk. And so the world, we are always speaking to ourselves through these neutral props, through the universe. And so for me, those were symbolic of a clearing, an awakening, a more of a authentic sense of self and way of being. Being able to dump that load of responsibility. I mean, there's a part of my brain and my mind that could just play with it. I can't, that can say, God, I can't believe that was still there. Well, surprise, surprise. And it's like a little loot bag sometimes, We get to the point where it's quite fun to be playing with these things. Like, oh, I wonder what this is going to be.
Well, it becomes exciting after a while.
It does.
It's not as... It doesn't feel like it's the end of the world anymore.
And that's the nice thing, is the more practiced we become, the more aligned we become I certainly used to go into the moment of, oh my, this is never going to end. I'm going to feel like this forever. How can this happen? When now it's really just an awareness that comes that, well, this, you know, this too shall pass. This is great. I'm allowing myself to be with whatever the integration is, whatever the emotions are, whatever's required. And if I want to eat chocolate, I do.
And it's so amazing when we become more of a conscious intender, when we start putting our intentions into the universe, and then the universe responds, it answers, and you get those goosebumps or thrill bumps when you recognize where your intentions and what's happening around you coincides.
Well, yes, you answer yourself as the universe through the universe. And I like to say the intentions are fabulous. And oftentimes I appreciate using the word declaration. You can just declare this is the way I want to be. I made a few huge declarations and they come from a deep place. Like, I'm not living like this. This is how it started for me. I'm not living like this anymore. I'm done with this. I don't know what is after this, but I know it's got to be better than this. I'm done. And it was as though the whole multiverse stood still. Thor's hammer came down. The lightning shook. And my entire world changed. Ta-da!
And it's funny, oftentimes, I find it's even, this part is even more pronounced when the declarations aren't as big, but still pronounced enough to be coming from solid ground. The universe seems to still bring some echoes of the old ways of being.
Yep.
It's almost like a little bit of a, not I don't want to call it actually a test, but it is an old echo so that you for yourself can start to see that you actually did change. It's almost like a convincer for oneself that oneself can recognize, hey, you know what? I am actually acting differently. I actually am being differently. And it is actually a different way that I'm now experiencing my world. And not only am I seeing that in my thoughts, but even in the way that I'm feeling and the way that I'm being and the way that I'm acting. And at that point, I have found when I have made it that complete, the echoes leave, and what I perceive and get from my world shifts completely and entirely.
Well spoken. Well spoken. I agree. And I'm loath to use that word test as well. I've been playing with that word for a while and wanting to come up with a new one. So if anyone out there has a word that would be, oh, like a cinnamon. I like a cinnamon.
All those yummy cinnamons.
I'm an orator. Yes, what I do. If you would have a little cinnamony synonym for the word test that has a different component to it. It is as though there's a reflection, an echo. It is an echo that comes born of the old. And I love those because it, like you said, it allows me to know and to notice that I feel different. That doesn't bother me anymore. It's like a graduation. There's this celebratory, hark the herald, Jasmine. You got it, sister. Well done. And it feels good because that thing, that thorn, that hook, that old belief, that sabotage is gone, never to return again. Ta-da!
Could you pass me two more of those candy synonyms?
It is cinnamon month, isn't it? Cinnamon heart, synonym heart. Ooh, that's fascinating. Synonym heart month. It's Valentine's Day is coming up, isn't it?
Yes,
it is. February. It's another Hallmark day coming up. You know, for years I didn't like Valentine's Day. Like a long time. I never celebrated it. I was on this rebellious tangent about it being a Hallmark holiday. Same with Mother's Day and Father's Day. It was just another reason to sell cards and to boost up the retail industry and to, you know, falsify some romanticized idea of love where you had to spend tons of money. my thing was, you want to buy me flowers? Buy me flowers on a Wednesday just because. And there's a part of me that loves that when I receive flowers or chocolate or just a nice note or a sweet smile or something from somebody on Facebook or a phone call or a text or anything. And I have softened. I have learned to embrace Valentine's Day.
Well, and isn't that also a lovely example for how our beliefs shape the way that we feel about even something like a day?
Totally.
Simply because it's called Valentine's Day doesn't necessarily make you feel one or another way. Some people that have never heard of the concept won't feel anything about it. But if you believe that it's just a Hallmark day to screw you over and cheap you out of your money or
and quadruple the price of roses,
well, then it's going to make you feel like you don't want to participate. But if on the other hand, you see it as a wonderful, lovely day to celebrate the love that one might hold for another, well, then it might feel like something you actually want to engage in.
Absolutely. And that's changed substantially. And that was a nice exercise for me to notice that it's okay. I can indulge in that. I can participate without any heavy meaning. And I can also not participate because I know a lot of people, they suffer. They suffer because because of what's sold around that. You're not in a relationship. You're all alone. It's an anti-Valentine's Day movement. It can bring up a lot of raw feelings for a lot of people. And I find when we get to the place of it's just a day and it doesn't, what does it mean? Nothing. It's neutral. And we can play with it any way we want. And if we want a relationship of an intimate, beloved, romantic relationship with our other, our divine complement, then one of the best ways to start is to begin to enjoy the love that's around, to celebrate the couples that we see, to notice the love between people. Isn't that nice that people celebrate Valentine's Day? I look forward to celebrating that with my sweetheart. I wonder what I would do, what kind of flowers I would get them, or would I take them parachuting, or, you know, in my divine relationship with my divine complement, what are we going to do? Are we going to go to a comedy club, or what are we going to do? And so that's the first step, and actually I find, or one of the many steps that can be taken as a first step to start to notice where we may be turning against or fighting against something or being really saucy with it and very snickety with it, because it's bringing up feelings within us about something that we supposedly lack. But we can bring that energy in anytime we want and have it with us, even if it's not embodied in the physical immediately.
So to bring it all back around, the question then really becomes, how do you want to feel?
Yeah.
How do you want to experience your world? And understanding that you actually are the master of your own beliefs. There isn't a single belief that you hold that you didn't create at some point. So if you are the creator of your beliefs and they determine how you feel, how do you want to feel? And according to that, how do you want to shape your beliefs? So when you actually start to mold the clay of your own thoughts, you do become the artist and the master of your own world. And then the joy really starts to take off. Then things really start to become a whole lot more fun and a whole lot more engaging. And just a joy ride, so that even when you flip out, when you're raw, or when you're down, you can start to enjoy that too. Because it's not something bad that shouldn't be there, but rather just another nice step along the journey to even more joy.
Well spoken. Well spoken.
So, we are currently refining our website. So far, you can still visit us at theacademyoflife.com. Soon it'll be springoflifecenter.com.
Yay, I'm so excited.
And we are rebranding, we are remodulating our website, we are creating new training programs where we're not only offering this information, but a whole lot more. And it's an exciting time for us, and we're definitely looking forward to engaging with you much, much more and to just have a blast. We look forward to you joining us on the show and to creating some new intentions, not just for each of us individually, but for us as humanity and a larger group. How lovely is it to keep creating and creating all these wonderful new levels of possibility that haven't been here before? I wonder, with getting out of the way of what might be possible and actually looking at completely new paradigms of what could be created if we would look beyond of what has been created into the fantastic worlds of creative invention and exploration, what could still be created? We've only started with the age of technology. Let's not only find technology such as the lovely computers and internet radio, such as this, but also new technologies for exploring ourselves within. Not only such as hypnosis, but also other ways that every day and every breath become a walking meditation. And that is the joy of life. That is where we're heading. And there is so much more that is possible that we haven't even begun to explore. We've passed the threshold of the new life, and new life is coming in with the new life of the sun.
So thank you for listening to the Spring of Life show. We're grateful to be here and happy to speak with you and enjoy your energy. And we wish you happy vibrations, joyous creations, purposeful freedom, crystal clear clarity, and beautiful integrity.
Of course, lots of love and lots of excitement to all.
Love and excitement. Well done. Thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to speaking with you next week.